For a second, I forgot there was another Snowman film coming out that was a murderer film.
With Jeremy Renner, and it's probably Jeremy Renner, doesn't it?
It's not. Jeremy Renner's not in that.
Isn't it?
Anyway,
he's got Magneto. Young Magneto.
He's
Michael Fassbender.
Is it? No, sure Jeremy Renner.
You're getting two films confused.
Am I?
You're getting Snowman and another one.
In the snow.
Yeah,
with
it's
a man.
It's in the snow, and it's got Elizabeth Olsen in as well. Because you saw the trailer for it, and you were like, based on everything I've seen in this trailer, I want to die. It was like,
is that what I said?
Basically, I'm not going to see this movie. You hate Elizabeth Olsen, you hate Jeremy Renner.
Both true.
You
both
hate
true.
Snow.
Yeah, I've always said that. I hate snow.
It sticks in my beard.
That's your catchphrase, right? Yeah. I hate snow.
Yeah.
It's rough and coarse and gets in everywhere.
Here's Matt Turner. I hate snow. That's my catchphrase. Actually, I hate snow. That's my catchphrase. Is my catchphrase. You got it weird in pounded brackets.
I hate snow. That's my catchphrase. That's my catchphrase.
Every catchphrase in the Life's a Pitch universe has to have you announcing who you are first. So it is, I'm Matt Turner, I hate snow, that's my catchphrase.
Yeah.
That's his catchphrase.
Exactly that, yeah. Yeah, that's precisely it.
Okay, so from Cyber Connor, we've got The Guy Who Shits. And in brackets he's put, the real horror was inside him all along.
The Guy Who Shits, it reminds me of a David First cartoon.
It's a short story, and it's the guy who went in the cubicle first from Trainspotting.
It's a prequel.
Basically, after the Wachowskis did The Matrix and then The Animatrix, and everyone was like, oh my god, story set in the same universe, this is really cool.
Yeah.
Some guy was like, I want to do the story of the guy who left that awful turd before What's-His-Face went in.
Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor went into the cubicle.
So, yeah, because that toilet is fucking disgusting.
Like, so he's a really, really uptight businessman, right, who for months, he flies around all the time, he only eats aeroplane food, and he's just got, like, horrendous constipation, and he can't do anything about it, and he happens to be in Edinburgh, and he just goes, like, fuck it, I'm gonna buy the most laxatives I can possibly find. I need to get this all cleared out of my system. And he's like chugging them all down.
He's
and nothing
bloated.
Seems to,
he's
yeah,
super like...
Nothing seems to work. And he's walking along the street past this grotty looking fucking pub. And he's like, oh, it's coming. Now's the time. And he runs into the toilet. And he's shitting. And he's like, oh my God. Oh no. Oh shit. Oh no. It's all coming out. Oh, what am I going to do? And you just see him slowly like waste away. And gradually, like, it starts to swell up around him and just sucks him into the toilet and he gets swallowed down. And that, you know the bit where Ewan McGregor's reaching into the toilet and you see him, like, imagining that he's reaching down into a giant pool that actually exists there? That's where the guy is.
It's the optical illusion of him coming out of the toilet as well. Yeah. So, well, that's just what that toilet is.
It's a portal to a poo dimension.
The cause of his constipation was like a poo goblin.
Yeah.
It's like, that was sitting and getting bigger and bigger inside him. And once it was finally shat out, it turned its new habitat into a portal where it sucks people in and claims their souls.
Yeah. And little did Ewan McGregor know, but the only way you can escape is by wanting something more, like heroin. Yeah.
Well,
His heroin addiction saved him from being eaten by the more
than being eaten by a poo monster.
No, having just like a real fixated like obsession,
okay,
like
right.
You can block out
because he can block.
People are overcome by the how disgusting it is.
Yeah.
That there's a monster made of poo chasing them, and he feeds off their disgust.
Yeah, and then
and Ewan McGregor's managed to overcome it by like having just this clear focus on the heroin.
That's why poos stink. It's like a how the leopard's got his spots thing. That's why poos stink, so that the poo goblin can make you confused and claim your soul.
This is not something I think that we should turn into a children's book, though. Because you'll scar so many people.
No children's books in the universe of Trainspotting. I don't know why you would decide that.
The little baby who could walk on the ceiling.
I'm gonna make make some amendments. Wow, that's amazing. I'm going to make some amendments here. One, the man played by John Goodman.
Okay. God damn it. Every time.
That means we've got a CG thin John Goodman into the being sucked into like, the...
And also, he's a robot.
like Chris Evans in Captain America. We do that to John Goodman, and then over time he just becomes regular John Goodman. And the bit where he needs to go to the loo, that is shot and edited like a pregnancy scene in a late 80s, early 90s comedy movie. So okay. Like, oh my God, it's time. Piano music plays as he's running through Edinburgh. Like, well, they get the shot from Trainspotting, but he's running like that.
just hand on his stomach, another hand on his arse. Just like, oh no!
Oh God! And yeah, that's how he gets to the... Well, it wasn't the worst toilet in Edinburgh, but it's...
It is now. That's how he created the worst toilet in Edinburgh.
So from Jeff Beard, we've got the really big cake.
So that's a monster movie somewhere in there.
Flat Earthers.
I like this start.
It's a good start.
Oh boy.
It's a good place to start.
All discuss online as to why the Earth is actually flat. Like, I mean, to what end is the world flat? Maybe it's just a really big cake.
No, it's essentially right, we are just we're just copying and pasting the plot of Unfriended, except or whether you know the one I mean, where
the horror film with the where Facebook. They're haunted by the person who killed themselves on Facebook.
Yeah,
on Skype.
Except it's a bunch of flat earthers talking about how the Earth could be flat, just slowly being taken out by Alex.
I do hate them so much.
As you get tired of it.
It's literally a weird side effect of my job.
Oh God.
But I get emails from flat earthers very frequently being like, You're part of the conspiracy, aren't you? I have an alternative pitch for the really big cake.
What, other than you killing flat earthers?
Other than me killing flat earthers.
Right, my original idea was going on, it's a giant cake for an incredibly large Lovecraftian old one for its birthday.
Yeah,
and the beacons are lighting all across the world.
Ironically, it's like third
it's
birthday.
It's a giant pullback and reveal.
So it starts off as like a disaster movie, where flat earthers are like, why is this being suppressed? Like, why is this information being suppressed by scientists? And all scientists are part of a cult of this Cthulhu-esque entity.
Yeah,
it's a movie which supposes that they were right.
Yeah,
and that this it's a birthday cake for like the third Aeon birthday of an old one, which is. Like, ironically, the young one of the old ones.
It's got a little hat on and two larger Cthulhu monsters are behind it, just like, ah.
It's,
taking a photo.
It's Matt Lucas.
What, the giant Cthulhu monster? Matt Lucas. He's the baby. He's the baby.
Matt Lucas in a big old romper with... tentacles and a hat, a birthday hat.
So what was your pitch?
It doesn't matter. I'm cool. Sticking with that.
Question time. It's question time. Questions.
Hooray!
With Jeremy Paxman.
Yeah.
Yay!
From My Waste of Talent, we've got Kathy Lee Crosby.
Just that name and a question.
Yeah, yeah. We did have Dave Duchovny's lips.
Yeah, but this is... I don't know who Kathy Lee Crosby is.
I don't know who that is.
So my question to you is... Kathy Lee Crosby? Let me answer your question with another question.
Another question? No, the same question.
Yeah.
So from Ross Originals, we've got... How do you choose your guests?
Just sort of get them off the street.
Yeah. I personally like to choose my guests on my podcast, the Strike Comedy Podcast, mostly based on who invites us on their show. So you guys are really overdue coming on. I guess is the lesson here.
Didn't we get invited because we coincidentally, one of our episodes, we just happened to pitch a film.
Yeah.
And it was also, and it was young adult fiction the same week
you were doing. Yeah, that's...
We had to synergize or we'd have to be at war. And I think you guys made the right choice because there's more of us.
We would lose in a fist fight. That's why we had you on the show.
You guys better calm down or we'll bring around the strike boys.
We'll strike them off the list of podcasts in Sheffield. Yeah, if you hadn't done that, I would never have gone to the improv jam. So thanks for that.
You're welcome. Yeah.
I'm saying thanks. Aggressively. Thanks for that, guys. Yeah. I'm now...
Thanks for that, guys.
No, yeah, I won't shut up about improv now. So he's sick of it.
Do you know how fun it is hearing about what happened at improv?
Yes. I know exactly how fun it is. Really every fun. Time I miss a session.
It's just those punchlines really zing off, don't they? Oh, there's that setup right there, and oof.
When I was rolling around on the floor saying, I'm a hat.
Yeah, no, I was
that
laughing.
That was funny to hear about.
I was rolling the aisles. I constructed aisles just to roll in them.
Yeah.
And say, I'm a hat, because I liked it so much, I picked the catchphrase up as my own.
I'm a hat.
Yeah.
Well, you've come up with your own catchphrases that I've equally enjoyed.
Yeah, like I hate it when you talk about improv, Tom.
And another one from Ross Originals. We've got, what's your favourite spirit?
My favourite spirit? Whoopi Goldberg.
Casper, because he's the friendliest ghost.
Hmm?
I wasn't ready for this joke.
All right, what's your favourite spirit?
Gin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can I change my answer to the in the Sixth Sense when Misha Barton is just there as a kid and throws up a lot?
Yeah, in the tent.
Yeah, because yeah, that's like the really most the most heart wrenching moment of the film.
Yeah.
Is like, oh, actually, the moment you stop thinking of it as a ghost and start thinking of it as a little girl, like it's a little girl who was killed, poisoned, is throwing up all the time, and terrifies everyone who she sees. And then she makes friends with this lovely boy who grows up to be a fucking weird guy.
Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah,
that wasn't the one in the tent, was it? That was the one he gets grabbed, the ankle grab. Yeah.
No, it's the same girl. He comes back and then builds a little tent.
Builds
with her
a little tent with it, and then she throws up all over him.
That's the first ghost he makes friends with. Yeah,
God, and then she throws up all over him.
She throws up loads, and then he gets to tell the story. And then she's like, "I'm all better now.
I don't need to throw up anymore because truth has been told."
To be honest, she went on to be a weird person as well.
Yeah.
At some point, you probably should see The Sixth Sense. It's quite a good movie.
Yeah. I know everyone knows the spoiler because of 50 First Dates and just general pop culture awareness.
What, there's a spoiler in 50 First Dates? Yeah. That's a spoiler for 50 First Dates.
This is the one of the worst, because in 50 First Dates, like Drew Barrymore has amnesia and so she can't make new memories. And every day she and her family watch The Sixth Sense, because she bought it the day before she had the accident. And so I was watching this at the age of like 12 or 13 and it was like, oh my god, spoiler!
Can you?
And I didn't really pick up on it because I just didn't get the reference. And then, like, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years later, I started watching The Sixth Sense. And then I was like, motherfucker, I know what happens here.
Sandler!
Thank god,
probably
it was
the worst
sense
thing he's ever done.
Well, have you seen the director's cut of The Sixth Sense? When they say, that Adam Sandler, there's a whole weird scene that seems really out of place, and everyone's a lot older, and they say Adam Sandler marries her or something, and I could listen. This would work better if I'd ever seen 50 First Dates.
Yeah, it really would.
I mean, thank God it was The Sixth Sense and not The Village.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Oh no, I'd hate to have the twist of The Village spoiled.
Yeah, I know. Well, no, like, I mean, just for those characters having to watch The Village over and over again every day. Okay, so we've got one from Dwatg, or Don't Worry About the Government podcast. Since we're in the era of remakes, if you had to remake one movie, which I'm thinking is probably the way studios choose them, we've got to make a remake. Which one would you choose and who would you cast?
Highlander.
Right. I've not seen it, but good call, I think.
Well, Highlander is... It would be a fairly run-of-the-mill action film, but if you... So, the original Highlander, it's... I mean, it's about... First, I would still have Sean Connery as Fernando.
Fernando.
The Spanish man.
The Spanish man!
And probably... Because they have about the same ability to emote Keanu Reeves as the Highlander. Mm. And sort of a similar accent level. But my problem with the original Highlander is, like, these guys are, like, 1,000 years old. Mm. And are meant to be, like, the greatest swordsman in history. And the sword fights in Highlander are shite. Because, I mean, like, early 80s level of... like action.
They're a New Hope kind of lightsaber fight,
yeah,
aren't they?
It's and it's really disappointing because the rest of the film, it's like it's a decent plot, it's an all right action film. But then you get to the sword fights and you're like, thousands of years, you say? You're just running on top of cars, swinging swords at lights. I don't understand.
So I haven't seen Highlander, but I was watching Final Fantasy VII Advent Children once, and my mum went, "This is like Highlander. You'll enjoy Highlander." And I never watched Highlander.
Did you enjoy Advent Children?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
That is the correct
I've got
answer.
It on Blu-ray as well as DVD.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if you actually played Final Fantasy VII, it's amazing. If you didn't,
if you played it to the end,
fairly shit.
If you played it to the end and got the two secret characters, which you can go through the game without getting, but play a pretty big part in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Then, yeah, Final Fantasy VII Advent Children's a great movie to watch. But other than if you're just watching it coming in blind, you're like, what the fuck is happening? I mean, it gives you, like, a breakdown of shit that happened, but not a really in-depth one. Like, it's ridiculous.
I'd like a Labyrinth sequel written by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Who would you
see? I'm getting.
Is he playing the?
Yeah, he's playing Jareth, Jareth's successor, or maybe Jareth is a role. It's like the Goblin King is always called Jareth. Anyway, we're already getting a Dark Crystal series on Netflix.
Who would you cast as Sarah?
Sarah. Let's move the stars for no one. I think...
I've not seen Labyrinth.
Oh, that's a shame.
What? Oh,
me neither.
Even Tom, who doesn't even really like it, says what when you...
I've seen it 5 times
It's
now.
Essential viewing. But I feel like... I don't know. Who would you cast as Sarah? Like, it'd be kind of fun...
I think Anna Kendrick.
To be, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, wait,
like Anna Kendrick.
She can sing.
Yeah.
Even though, does Sarah do any singing?
No, she doesn't.
Well, she will in this.
She just
remake.
Runs from things.
I think she's going to be rapping if it's Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, they sing in Moana. There's not much rapping. There's a little bit of rapping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fine. Alex?
I would like to remake Terminator. Because I feel like that franchise could really use a fresh...
it's got legs.
Fresh storyline. Like, I feel like there's a lot of potential there to really make something new and unique in the time travel genre. I'd like to remake Hancock, the Will Smith film, because it's two really okay... It's one really good film and then one really shit film sandwiched on the end of it. And yeah. I'd like to remake it and cut out all of the weird shit about him being an immortal who's lost his memory and just have a film about a crappy superhero whose act gets cleaned up.
Yeah, what was
that? Because that right there is a great premise. Yeah. It's got great casting. Everyone's fantastic. And then halfway through, it's just like, we can never be together because we're immortal lovers who've forgotten each other. And I maybe gave you brain damage.
It's weird, isn't it? Because you get about three quarters of the way through the film, and then they go, right, here's the concept, and you're like, we had the concept already. We had the concept.
On board with the concept.
Act one was the concept. Yeah, it's. Have you seen The Tick, which is on Amazon Prime right
I've
now?
Not no.
With Peter Serafinowicz.
I've heard really mixed things.
Great. It's great. Every character is lovable and he doesn't make any sense, but it's brilliant.
It's Peter Serafinowicz.
I was going to say, for my one, probably just remake Blade Runner. Because it's a perfect film and doesn't need a sequel.
I would debate... some of those things.
Why do you have to mention Blade Runner every time we're on?
Stop. Don't believe the hype. Everyone is going on about 2049 being the best film of the year. I have seen at least 10 films better than that.
Oh, I need you to shut the fuck up right now. Blade Runner 2049. We're going to do this.
No, we're not, because I've not seen it.
Have you seen it?
Yes. It's really good.
What? Everyone say I'm the only. I must be the only sane person in the world.
Oh no, were you bored by philosophical musings?
It's not philosophical.
It is not.
To be fair, you have to have quite a high IQ to understand Blade Runner 2040. Whatever.
The one thing I will say, because I obviously can't spoil it for Alex, but at least it actually addresses the themes of the original book.
The original book is shit.
No, oh my god, no, it's not. The original Blade Runner is written by people who are vaguely aware of the existence of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Right. Do they or not? Because I watched the first one, and no fucker told me. It's a long movie. No one said whether they do or don't.
Right, there were bits in Blade Runner 2049, Blade Runner the year 29, where
it's a prequel.
I was laughing out loud because it was that bad.
What would you do if you had to make a prequel that was that far back? Like, you had to make Blade Runner 29.
But it has to... It has to have the same philosophical themes.
Yeah, yes. And you have to do the thing like my ultimate prequel guide is, you know, the Lord of the Rings Gollum scene, right? Where you have that sort of like...
If I had to make a prequel that was Blade Runner 29...
Blade Runner in the year 29 AD.
Yeah. I'd have Jesus, but...
It turns out he's a replicant.
No, it turns out he's an engineer from Alien.
God.
you'd have to have a time travel thing, wouldn't you? Because like
Ryan Gosling goes back in time to crucify Jesus,
to stare mournfully into middle distance, and wonder if he truly is alive,
and be like,
Because you do like a, I don't fucking know, a Hulk prequel, and everyone's like, oh, you're so calm all the time. And then it's just like, right, I get
Bruce
it.
Bruce Banner, the calmest scientist in the world.
Oh, it opens on him practicing Buddhism and meditating, you know, that sort of thing.
Wait, what?
As a child.
As a child. Yeah. Because that's literally how The Incredible Hulk opens.
Oh, fuck.
Wow.
You know what? Fuck this whole thing. I'm done.
No prequels, no sequels. Every film stands alone or doesn't stand at all.
I think that's why I didn't like Blade Runner 2049, because it was a sequel to something. And every film I've really enjoyed this year has been just a standalone, like, thing. Apart from Spider-Man. Oh, again, that's...
I watched that last night. Yeah. Fucking hell, that's a good film.
Yeah, it's so
bloody
good.
Nora, what a great film. I really enjoyed it.
You just find him really hot, don't you?
That is... irrelevant to the fact that it's a really, really good film.
Yeah. Love that movie. Like, yeah. Spider-Man, Batman, Lego Batman, Baby Driver.
Actually, no, if I had to reboot any film, I would do a reboot of Spider-Man just because everyone else has had a go. But I feel like maybe I've got a fresh take on Spider-Man. And I'd cast Donald Glover as Spider-Man and not as like a gang member. Which was the one thing that I was just like, come on, man. Fuck you.
They had us by the balls with that scene.
With that
it, was
casting,
like,
yeah.
It was like, oh, Donald Glover's in it. We're going to know his name. Is it Miles Morales? No, it's just some dude.
To be fair, he is too old to be Miles Morales now, for sure.
He does
sure.
have a cousin, though. He does have a young cousin who lives in the in the project or something.
I mean, was Donald Glover called Graham Morales? Like, it's sort of, it's sort of like, is it hinted at or...
It's so... That scene was dumb. I was like, what? Like, you could have cast anyone for that. You just needed to get Donald Glover in a Spider-Man film because people might come and see him as Spider-Man.
I think I'd watch anything with Donald Glover in. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. But, like...
So you're going to watch the Star Wars... The next Star Wars prequel thing.
Yeah, the Lando...
How have I forgotten Han
Solo's... The Lando movie. It's called the Lando movie. And... and I am going to see it. Yeah. But... Is Donald Glover, right? Because to do the Miles Morales thing, they've got to kill Peter Parker, right? That's the whole thing. Miles Morales is Peter Parker's friend.
I loved them to just brutally murder Peter Parker at the end of that.
Which means they've got to kill a child.
It's so happy in John Hughes-y.
That would have been such a great... Like, for a fucking Marvel film to pivot on that dime. To go, we cast this great kid... Fuck you. We watch Game of Thrones. We understand how the world works now.
It's like
if Cameron was in that car at the end of Ferris Bueller's Day Off and flew out the window.
I've got two ways of doing this. The first one is he's in that scene on the beach at the end where he's taken down that plane and then it's like, he's like going like, he's looking at someone and this is like, I did it, I finally did it, and then just one of the containers explodes. The second one, right, is... He's, like, triumphantly swinging away from somewhere where he's saved a load of people and just goes across some train track, like a subway track, monorail track.
Giant
and
newspaper.
Just gets hit by a train.
Giant newspaper.
No,
he's a Spider-Man.
I think if you're going to do it... I think if you're going to do it, you really have to drive it home and just like hit full-on American History X. He just gets curb stomped.
Jesus.
You know the bit like it's kind of the his weakest point, his darkest hour, where he's the wind guys just collapse the building on top of him, and he's staring at the mask, and he's like, if you're nothing without the suit, you don't deserve the suit. And he's just like, come on, Spider-Man, tries to do a push-up, and then falls down, and then is killed.
Yeah.
Like, he dislodges something, and it knocks him out, and he's just dead.
He's like, you can do this, pushes a thing, some rubble slides to the side, which a girder just comes down and impales his head.
Yeah,
and then all of the Avengers come and save the day.
Yeah.
The way I'd kill Spider-Man is if...
My favourite segment in a podcast.
Is if he's on that plane at the end and he just has one weak footing and just flips off, runs out of web shooters, no parachute anymore, just falls. The last scene of the film is just him falling.
Just gets sucked into that jet turbine.
Yeah, just into the jet turbine. Or he turns up at the Avengers facility at the end and Tony Stark just goes... Proper just shivs him.
Yeah.
And whispers the Lannisters send their regards.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
No, he offers him the press thing, and he's like, you know what, I'm gonna walk away from the Avengers, like, I've learned my lesson. Tony Stark's like, okay, and then he kills him, and he's like, if you're not with us, I don't know how I could have made this point more clear. If you don't listen to what the fuck I say, you don't get to be a superhero. I'm Tony fucking Stark. The fucking Iron Man.
Did you watch Civil War? That was the point.
And everyone's like, why are you doing that? He's like, something about Ultron.
ends with the discordant piano playing as Tony Stark wanders off back to the Avengers facility.
Ultron. And then Donald Glover steps out and he's like, it's your turn. You can do the press release. Someone's got to... I'm not backing out of a press release. And fuck am I proposing to Pepper Potts?
No. Pepper Potts is completely nonchalant. She's just like, yeah, you Donald Glover? Yeah, come on, you.
I've already seen him kill five people. At this point,
on our third Black Widow.
The secret serial murderer of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Tony Stark. Who knew?
I mean, that deranged sociopath.
Yeah,
it wasn't even the original Captain America. He died.
He got frozen. The first thing Captain Rogers saw when he got unfrozen was Tony Stark over him with a knife, just fucking shiving him.
My dad made you, I will unmake you.
The sins of the father.
Oh boy. Right, yeah.
Right,
what was the last question? If you were going to remake something, what would it be?
How would we kill Spider-Man?
My perfect Sunday.
My perfect Spider-Man death. So from Ross_Originals, we've got monster couples. We're very happy together, actually.
Is this Ross's way of telling us that we should make a monster movie where the husband doesn't die?
The thing is, I think he's done that before.
He did explicitly ask for that.
Yeah, and now he's doing it again. So, think of a monster bride.
I feel like this is a mockumentary.
No, it's like, you see Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that, except both of them is harboring a terrible secret that they're a monster. And both parts of the couple are like, I've got to keep this secret from my partner.
Vampires and werewolves, sort of thing, is it? You know, like being human style, or...
Yeah, that kind of...
I'm really going for a movies in other universes thing at the moment. But can I just pitch the prequel to Monster? I've completely forgotten her name.
Is it Halle Berry?
No, it's
no,
not
that's Monster's Ball.
Oh God, no! No, not that. No, Monster, the serial killer played by
Jake Gyllenhaal.
A woman who travels across America with her daughter.
Fucking hell! Yeah.
Oh well, that one. If only I knew the names of any.
I haven't seen it.
Yes.
I feel like
I like Jake Gyllenhaal though.
Yeah,
as the guy who's secretly a vampire.
I thought this might just be a sequel to What We Do in the Shadows. Like, you know, it's just
actually a monster couple. Yeah, no, I guess, but like, I think the idea of both being monsters. But I was also thinking of like casting the woman who's...
Oh, it has to be a woman, doesn't it, Tom?
Well, yeah. Like
they exist, Matt.
Like casting a woman, Zoe Saldana or something, who is actually a giant snake, who is literally a giant snake, and Jason Sudeikis, who is just a monster. He's just a really bad person.
He's Sully from Monsters Inc.
That's his secret. He's Sully from Monsters Inc.
That's my secret. I'm always Sully.
Well, this got very Sully.
Too much. I liked it.
Yeah, that was... monster couples.
We're very happy.
Monster couples plural, so I guess...
No,
they go to couples therapy retreat.
No,
that's why it should be.
What's the American sitcom with all of the couples? Modern Family?
I don't know.
Friends?
No.
I like this. I really like this idea, actually. They're a couple. They're both secretly monsters. One's played by Jake Gyllenhaal and one's Jason Sudeikis.
Mm.
And Jake Gyllenhaal's like, he turns into he transforms into like a werewolf type thing, but not necessarily tied to the moon. He's just a giant horrible monster. And Jason Sudeikis is actually just like a brutal, horrible
murderer.
Yeah, and they realize there's something wrong with their relationship. So they go on this couple's retreat, and the therapist's trying to get them through. This therapist, played by Whoopi Goldberg, is like the couple's counselor. And the whole way through, they're trying to work out what the problem with their relationship is. And finally, Jason Sudeikis finds Jake Gyllenhaal like transformed and killing someone. He's like, "Oh my god." And Jake Gyllenhaal transforms back, and he's like, "Oh my god, I have this thing that I can't control, and I hope you can still love me." And he's like, "Yeah, of course, I love murdering people." And then the rest of the film is just them having a massive rampage and seeing bonding over like killing everybody else at the couple's retreat.
What you've done is you've just taken the first half of Brokeback Mountain and bolted it onto Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
And where's the problem?
I was thinking this could be a franchise. In the first one, it's called Monster Couple, in which they find out.
Yeah.
And then the second one, Monster Couples, which, much like Alien and Aliens, we just add more monster couples. Yeah.
It's like Daddy's is home.
Daddy's is homes is...
Yeah. Have you seen the first one?
No.
So, like...
Have you?
I've seen parts of it.
Wow.
So, Daddy's Home, basically, a guy's, like, estranged from his kids. And whatever his name is, Will Ferrell, is estranged from his kids. And then their new dad, he's trying to, like, get one over on him, but he's really bad at everything. Second one... His dad and the newly bonded with new dad both have their dads here. Genuinely. So it's just granddad's home.
So it's just the generation game.
It's me.
Matt, are you high?
No, I didn't fucking write it.
He must be. He's recounting the plot of Daddy's Home.
No, Daddy's is homes.
Daddy's is homes.
Where are
otherwise
the apostrophes?
Otherwise known as Daddy's Home too.
Oh yeah. So it's just like that film. Multiple cuckoos flew over several nests, each of which is inhabited by more than one cuckoo. You know that classic film about two psychiatric hospitals?
Yeah.
Who play each other in the amateur psychiatric hospital baseball league.
Yeah, it's called...
And one of them's an underdog.
It's called Some Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
What's next?
Okay, so we've got one from Dwatg, or Don't Worry About the Government podcast. The Raven on the Writing Desk.
So, I want to say James McAvoy plays Edgar Allan Poe.
Are we just doing like a modern interpretation of The Raven, but with the actual writer of the poem, because we're like cool millennials?
Yeah, but, right, the guy from BBC's Raven, the children's show...
Warriors!
He's just stood on his desk.
He's stood on his desk.
He says, "You can have a mark on your standard."
Walks through it.
Nevermore.
he just issues Edgar Allan Poe a series of increasingly complex challenges. Who's the monster?
The guy from Raven.
He can turn into a raven, yeah. But he was always trying to help the kids, sort of.
Kind of. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know what would have helped
what
me
was
as a teenager?
Threat in Raven?
Not having.
I mean, the kids vanished if they failed the trials, but like they seemed to be there willingly.
I think the world.
There was I shouldn't know this. It's Navar.
Wow.
It's an anagram of Raven.
Oh, okay.
Navar Moore.
I've got to pitch a completely different movie.
Thank you.
Right, we are. I'm going. I'm on a theme here, and I'm just going to stick with it of prequels. This is the prequel to Alice in Wonderland, because the Mad Hatter's riddle: why is a raven like a writing desk? This is the answer to that riddle, and it's how the Mad Hatter went mad.
Ooh.
is the story of the Mad Hatter and a raven and a writing desk.
Can we?
And that's all he can remember of his past.
James McAvoy plays the Mad Hatter.
Can we infer that this raven goes from writer to writer, sending them increasingly insane?
God, yeah, that's a great idea.
You just pitched a cinematic universe. Congratulations.
I tied it into the Edgar Allan Poe thing. Yeah.
Except it's not the fucking dude from Raven.
But listen.
I mean, it could just be a raven. Everyone can think.
It has a Scottish accent.
If I was a kid,
it's voiced by James McAvoy with his real accent.
If I was a kid in Raven, the best thing that guy could do to help me was make me not have to study Edgar Allan Poe anymore.
This is just you admitting that you really fucking wanted to be on BBC's Raven, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I applied so many times.
I've got 7 Blue Peter badges, but I was never on Raven.
Yeah, I thought that going on Blue Peter will be like a foot in the door of Raven.
I guess I'm not a warrior.
I did so many charity fun runs to try to get on that prestigious cast.
Oh god, I can imagine if you eventually did get on, you'd go out in the first round after all that. Yeah. After so many Blue Peter badges, they won't save you from the challenges ahead.
He's weighed down by the coat of Blue Peter badges that he's worn onto the show. It's like, I can't get across this drawbridge or something.
I think you mean cape.
The chainmail of Blue Peter badges.
It's like splints on it.
It's got a shield. It's just made out of the little shields.
Blue Peter badge shield made out of smaller Blue Peter badges.
Are we now pitching a universe in which other CBBC properties send champions into Raven?
Yeah, that is a far better, like Battle Royale. That's the not even just CBBC or CBBC, just any children's game property. Show or okay. children's show can send someone. Mainly because I just want the mad bald guy from Crystal Maze facing off against Scrap Heap Challenges Robert Llewellyn.
And then Tracy Beaker's in there cutting tendons just like with a flip knife.
The woman who played Sabrina the Teenage Witch is like, I don't have my powers here. No.
What other CBBC properties are there?
The girl, the woman who plays
it's all commentated by one of the kids from Newsround.
The woman who plays Sabrina the Teenage Witch like turns to the camera and goes, why am I here? Her head explodes.
The commentator is Lizzo from Newsround, if you remember that guy.
Lizzo Mazimba.
You don't know?
Yeah.
You don't remember Lizzo?
He was in Toy Story 2.
What?
Yeah.
Right.
Do you want to the line that Lizzo Mazimba says in Toy Story 2?
3, 2, 1.
Hold it! There's a couple more bags coming from the terminal!
That's it.
That's his whole role in Toy Story 2.
I mean, I'm fascinated by this little tidbit, but more so by the fact that you guys have clearly spent... Like, what? did you guys rehearse this?
No, we've done it before, though.
Yeah, we've done it before.
We're having a conversation about that one line before.
Why? What's so special about this guy from Newsround?
He's just great. He's the...
nice guy.
He's the entertainment correspondent on actual news now.
He graduated.
Like in Los Angeles, he goes to all the Hollywood premieres and stuff, the Oscars. He does, just does the Oscars, I think, now for actual BBC News.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's good.
Good on you, Lizzo.
Yeah.
Proud of you, man.
Lizzo's done good.
Thanks for bringing me the news as a child.
And thanks for telling me that there was a couple more bags coming from the terminal in Toy Story 2. Yeah. It was like essential exposition. Anyway, Raven and the Writing Desk.
I feel like we've pretty much nailed that one down 6 times.
So you've got one from Paul Anthony, and that is literal death.
I think the irony here is it would all be figurative.
It's the story of a really, really pedantic English teacher. who hates misuse of the English language, especially misuse of the word literally.
He's the death of the English
and
language.
So what he does...
It's the literal death of the English language.
He kills kids who misuse the word literally.
Right.
And sets it up like... makes it look like accidents.
Okay.
It's a kind of cat and mouse game between him and the school, yeah.
Like, and the investigator in the school, yeah. Who is like a young investigator, like a boy detective type person.
It's a boy detective who just uses slang like all the time. Yeah.
Like, oh my god, that horror film about the school teacher where like he kills people. It's just so scary, I literally shit myself 5 times. That's a line from the film.
And then you just hit as the kind of the focus shifts to behind him. Where...
So he's playing our teacher on our boy detective.
The boy detective has to be played by one of those like 12-year-old YouTube rapper kids.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
We're not gonna do a generic pitch of, I don't know, one of the kids from Stranger Things.
No, it has to be someone who's really terrible and obnoxious.
Can it be that fried chicken
against Anthony Hopkins?
No. I have an even better pitch for the teacher, because he's not been in enough. Timothy Dalton.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. As like a posh, decent public school English teacher, I can imagine him in tweed.
I hate when kids use the word literally, not literally.
It's the literary death of the English language. You said it. No, I said literate. It's a different word.
Listen, you little shit. and the little kid manages to beat him just by making him misuse the word. Like, he gets him so mad, he goes, I literally... Oh, no, everything I was about to say he will actually do. I was going to be like, I literally hate you. No, wait, he does. I'm literally going to kill you. Oh, he does.
No, yeah, but he says, I'm literally going to kill you. And the kid goes, that's a confession. Yeah, that's, and he's like, that's... you would, of all people, you would never use that word.
But that's how
inappropriately.
That's how he also gets onto murdering kids as well, yeah. Like, because he breaks his rule of not being literal with everything.
Yeah.
Like having to, if he says literally something, he has to do.
Yeah. So he says, so I'm literally going to kill you
yeah. During class. Like, he breaks out in an angry fit and just goes, I'm literally going to kill you. And then later on, like, he's like, oh god,
I have to do it,
or I'm a hypocrite, and that's worse than being a murderer.
Yeah, so it gets caught by one of the kids from Stranger Things. I mean, you said
your 12-year-old YouTube rapper can die.
You said annoying and obnoxious. I'm like, I'm pretty sure all of them.
Why can't he be that chicken connoisseur guy? You know, the one who reviews Pengu's fried
munch.
Chicken shops. Pengu's Munch. Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
Why not? We're talking about 12-year-old YouTube rappers. I think that guy's like 23, but it doesn't matter.
It's a kid in a horror film. You can cast whoever the fuck you want, to be honest.
Just a young Mara Wilson. Okay,
Jaden Smith.
Yes, it's Jaden Smith.
But he's clueless the entire time.
Yeah.
Like he is in real life.
And Will Smith is the school head teacher.
The hip, cool...
Because Jaden can't be in a film without his dad.
He's chaperoning him through the scenes.
So from Cameron Aaron Griffiths, we've got The Cold Dinner.
The Cold Dinner.
This time... The dinner's eating you.
I like it. I think this is like a student house, and they've gone home over the summer, and there's one they've cooked this big pot of these mysteriously cheap like lentils or something.
Had to be lentils. Mysteriously cheap.
Yeah, mysteriously cheap.
Like magic beans.
Yeah, exactly.
Like literal magic beans.
Yeah, and this guy's, you see this scene at the start where someone's walking home from lectures or whatever, and this guy on the side of the road is like, do you want to buy some beans?
hey kid, got some magic beans.
Make sure you plant them. I'll trade your student loan for this bag of magic beans.
Oh my god, yes.
Make sure you plant them, and then like, and then they realize that they're so hungry they have no food at home. They cook them into a curry, and then they have to go home for.
They leave dish.
Leftovers, yeah.
Yeah, they lift the dishes like unwashed and stuff, and it over the course of the summer.
It becomes sentient.
Yeah, it just becomes alive. And I think...
it just becomes the movie Life, but in a student flat.
Yeah. But, like, for some reason, they can't leave the house. I mean, I think maybe, like, it clogs up the locks
it's
or grown, something
yeah,
like
it's, that. It's grown around. Mm. Like, there's a weird mould in the... They come back, and the house is in a worse state than it was. And given that it's, like, the young one's flat, like, or the young one's house, it's basically just a nightmare anyway.
Yeah, I like the idea that... The mess has become sentient due to like a psychic buildup of resentment between everyone in the flat who's like, well, I'm not going to clean it up.
Yes!
It's just their hatred for each other manifest. And so that's what keeps them in there. They're just too stubborn to leave. They're just like, well, I'm not cleaning up his body.
Just, they're all sitting around the table having like a meeting. Just
sorry. Just to take responsibility.
Yeah, just going, well, I don't know why I should do it. You were the last person to do it. But all the while, the stuff is just occasionally reaching over and just going on their shoulder before pulling back. And they're all just going, well, that's not my responsibility.
We outlined a rota.
There was a rota, they pointed it, and it's just covered in goop. Just like, yup, yup.
No, the curry is eating it.
Who plays the curry?
Tim Curry.
So he's the clown from It, but with like a grey-green curry face. Rather
no. It's like it's sort of like Vin Diesel with Iron Groot, which is he never really says anything, but they just need to attach a big name to it. So they just pull him into a studio. And it's just like Tim Curry. We just want you to go.
Well, no,
for like 5 hours.
They motion capture him being goop.
It's like what's that film where that? It's like The Thing.
Yeah,
but it sort of assumes the form of Tim Curry instead of like the people that
but
are
it's
in...
still obviously a weird lentil curry.
Yeah. Lentim curry.
How does it end? How does someone get out in the end then?
They don't. They all die.
Is it just a kind of the landlord comes back and like, what have you done to my house?
Well, I didn't do anything.
It turns out it's the landlord's fault all along, and there were some.
A previous occupant of the one of the so one of the students is like a biomedical science student who's bought some weird thing that his lecturer has been researching, like a sample of it back, and he spills it onto the carpet and never cleans it up, and then someone spills some of the curry on it and they kind of react.
Magic and science.
I'm gonna make a change here that I think will probably leave the audience quite confused, but I think the old man who gave them the beans should be Tim Curry as well.
Yes. So,
but also Tim Curry, the curry monster.
Yeah.
Is
okay,
giving them
yeah.
the lentil
it's
beans.
Like
I think
it's
well,
propagating
it's how they
itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I think that it's actually their landlord. So that's like
Tim Curry is also their landlord.
Not oh, he kills people off. The curry man is the landlord, yeah. And he kills people off so he can keep renting the house out.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he just leaves the lentils in the fridge. That's the only thing in the fridge when they come to
when they get there.
Food time. Yeah.
And sooner or later, they're gonna eat those lentils,
and I will have my children.
I will have my youth again.
I will have my revenge. On the young people.
because he was bullied by students as a kid.
I feel like it's like his family home. He was living there for years and years.
And the whole property, the whole area became like overpopulated with students.
Yeah, and he
found a magical way to stay young. Yeah.
And he was...
Right, I think we're getting a little bit off.
He was running out of money, so he had to start renting the flat out. Yeah. And then they did so much damage to his, like, family pride and joy home that he eventually decided to start killing them.
Yeah, Don't cut us off there, Tom. I mean, we've done the funny bit that all the audience are interested in, and now we're getting to character motivation.
Now we're
which is the bit everyone really wants to now listen to.
I mean, I love it. So from Matthew Presley, we've got Attack of the 3-inch Bee.
The 3-inch Bee?
Yeah. And in brackets, yeah, I think he's put something about 3 inches actually being quite big for a bee.
It is big for a bee, but it's small for a hornet. So, I mean, like...
So, relatively, we're not scared. Moving on.
That's the tagline.
At worst, one person will die. He gets...
I love how that's the tagline. Big for a bee, small for a hornet. As in, like, it's written... So it sounds threatening, but actually, if you read it, it's like, really?
Do you think you could make... Right. What's his name? The guy who was in that glass box over the Thames.
David Blaine
is at it again.
In the glass box.
But this time...
He's there with a bee.
Right, that's a great idea for just a movie. Not a monster movie, but just a movie where he's in that glass box with a bee and they form a friendship.
Yeah, it's like the Alan Bennett film where the woman turns up on his drive, but it's just a magician and a bee.
I would like to pitch, right, it's the terrifying story of what happens if you shrink down Mel B of the Spice Girls.
And she's not happy with it.
And she's super not happy.
She is fucking furious. Simon Cowell is
Simon Cowell.
Simon Cowell is pushing a new show called
3-inch X Factor.
3-inch X Factor. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Why not? You know how the X Factor goes on tour, right?
Yeah.
Travel costs are getting in up there. ad revenue is not what it was. So he decided to post the whole show.
Mel, we've got to start downsizing. just referencing that film that it's Matt called, Damon's in.
It's called Downsizing, yeah. Looks weird. Looks like a good idea, but not for a film.
just a good idea for a short story, probably.
Just an idea that you'd be like, it looks like a good idea for a comedy trailer.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like a good idea for.
So... Just Mel B. I mean, I think Simon Cowell did it, and then was like, "Oh no, wait, this is a...
no." Yeah, but Mel B. It's like the Invisible Man with James Woods. Was that James Woods? Anyway, the one with Hollow Man. That's the name. That's the actual name of the film. It's like that where this experiment has the side effect of making them a dangerously insane psychopath. Mm. Like murderously so. It's weird.
Mel B, a dangerously insane psychopath.
Wait, isn't that Scary Spice?
Yeah, yeah. Oh my god.
Oh, cool.
No, they're going to bring the rest of the Spice Girls in the third act to fight Mel B.
Yeah, but turns out
they've been keeping her in check all this time. Yeah.
But they can't win when she's that small because, like Ant-Man science, she gets denser and therefore stronger. Shut up. And, you brought us on for science, there's some science. So no one can beat her, but they're like...
So Hollywood approved science.
Yeah. But the third act is like them opening the doors and the mist coming through and it's the rest of the Spice Girls, except there's something slightly off about Victoria Beckham and it's a stand-in because they couldn't afford Victoria Beckham. and the rest of them, like, they shrink
it's
them down. They have
Cara Delevingne.
So what you've pitched here, maybe unintentionally, is a sequel to Spice World.
Cinematic Universe.
Hey.
Spice World 2.
The 3-inch bee.
Attack of the 3-inch bee.
Brackets 3 inches is quite large for a bee.
But small for a hornet. None of that tagline makes sense anymore.
Right. So, from Toby James, we've got The Curse of the Shared Internet History.
That's too creepy for even me.
I use mine a lot. I use my internet history a lot. My productivity would go down if I had a shared internet history.
Oh, because you wouldn't be able to scroll.
See what sites I'd been to.
It's weird because... like my brother watches YouTube stuff on my account.
So
when I look back through the watch history, I'm just like, oh, and like I get recommendations for just random
shit.
That's
the problem, the recommendations.
Yeah.
No. Keep it away from me.
So somebody our protagonist is like a kid, right? And they're
one of the kids from Stranger Things.
One of the kids from Stranger Things, and they had
to choose.
Choose your favorite.
They had a twin who died, right? So they get obsessed with like spending time on the internet, and they just kind of throw themselves into an online world to escape their grief and stuff. But gradually they start noticing that the adverts for the adverts that pop up on their browsing history are all like linked to things that were potentially implicated in the way that his twin died.
Oh my god.
Someone who used the internet bought the things and like staged this, like it was all planned in advance.
Oh my goodness.
My brother's accidental death was actually a murder, and it's someone who shares an internet history with me.
It's that bit from The Sixth Sense, but with an internet history.
Yeah.
I thought you were going in a direction of... I like that idea a lot. I thought you were going in the direction of there is a parallel universe in which I was the one who died, and the only way we can communicate is through our internet history.
That's also very good. God damn.
We're getting dangerously close to good ideas.
I think mine is more of a horror film.
Movie, whereas there'd be a really cool sci-fi idea.
We've got a genuine horror film or a millennial version of The Lake House.
God damn it, Tom. So true.
From Ed Crawley, we've got Mr. Blobby's Revenge.
That's a monster movie already.
This opens with the death of
Noel
Edmonds, obviously.
Yeah.
Because much like the rest of the Spice Girls and Mel B, Noel Edmonds was the only thing one keeping Mr. Blobby in check.
He was like the keeper.
And what we get is the actual plot from that point on is relatively thin. It's just Mr. Blobby going on a rampage. But in order to give Mr. Blobby some humanity, we get these flashbacks to like he's in the green room out the back of
Noel's house party.
No, the stupid boxes.
Deal or no deal.
Deal or no deal.
He's in the green room at the back of Deal or No Deal, just like, oh, Blobby, Blobby. He's really alone, and then he like sees a knife and he's like, oh, Blobby.
Blobby, Blobby, Blobby.
Blobby, Blobby. And then like you hear the buzzer of finished recording and Noel comes in going, no, Mr. Blobby, I love you. And Mr. Blobby's like, oh, Blobby, 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 Blobby. And you just get flashbacks, like slowly going back. Like the flashbacks work backwards until you get to the point where Mr. Blobby is not born but found. In like some satanic death cult by Noel Edmonds, and he's just like, I will keep you safe. Blobby, blobby, blobby. Like tries to stab him, and Noel Edmonds like with his lightning fast reflexes goes no, grabs the knife and gunges him.
The reason Noel Edmonds has been making all of these terrible TV shows over the years is because he needs loads and loads of money to keep Blobby entertained.
Yeah,
and like build a Blobby containment unit.
I love you, Mr. Blobby. Now like, get back on that phone. He's like, we've got to do deals. Oh, no,
he's the bad guy.
We can't be the first ones to make that joke.
Yeah, I think not the first time we've made that joke.
Potentially.
Yeah.
I just like the idea that, you know, Noel Edmonds like, oh, Mr. Blobby, what are we going to do with you? I mean, we can't have another Orville.
Oh, shit.
So Noel Edmonds dies. And Mr. Blobby is brought back to TV. And at first everyone's like, this is fucking amazing. And Mr. Blobby feeds off the adoration, but he starts to realise the hollowness of celebrity.
He literally feeds off adoration. He gets bigger the more adoration he gets.
Yeah. And then as it turns sour, his TV show, he has a game show that's hosted by Mr. Blobby that makes no sense. Kind of number wangy type thing.
It's called Golden Balls.
But then people who lose, he actually kills them. And nobody realises.
And the great thing is, this whole studio is constructed with a giant pit in the centre of it, right?
That so Blobby lives in.
He's in there. And you can just see him just like up to his armpits in this pit. Well, and then if they get the question wrong, he like grabs them out of like, they're in these cages.
And everyone just assumes that it's like, oh, a charming thing. Because everyone's got this weird cultural blind spot about the crazy monster that is Mr. Blobby.
The final scene is of course the final flashback where Noel Edmonds the last time comes out of Deal or No Deal and goes to hug Mr. Blobby, and he's not strong enough anymore, and Mr. Blobby just slowly crushes the life out of him. and the final the final moment is him just trying to cry, but he can't because he's a man in a suit, and like, just trying to cry over Noel Edmonds' corpse, and then we fade to black.
He's
got Noel Edmonds in his arms, and Noel Edmonds goes, "Now I'm Blobby."
I like the idea that at the end, like. He absorbs Noel Edmonds into his chest, right? He like crushes him to death with this big hug, and then there's just like everyone's like, "No, that was our last chance. Like, that's all we had. The world is doomed now." And then you just see this white spot at the centre of his chest expanding and expanding and expanding until it's like, across the whole of Mr. Blobby, who just melts into the marshmallow fluff.
I like the ending that. He's just a giant, sort of kaiju-like monster who then at the end pops his head off and it's Noel Edmonds.
Like, none of these theories are incompatible.
Yeah.
They could all be true.
Yeah, they could all happen in the same movie. But yeah,
Noel Edmonds takes his head off and goes, "Now it's my turn to make a deal." Blobby. He's enslaved the world.
For those American listeners.
Or any other country. Any other country.
Or anyone born after the year 2000.
Maybe even earlier than that.
Mr. Blobby was a very successful singer who had a Christmas number one in this country a couple of years ago.
Mr. Blobby. 2015, he had a number one single.
Mr. Blobby had a Christmas number one.
Yeah, I know. Some of the Smurfs, though.
Yeah.
And Bob the Builder.
Man, we're a terrible,
and
terrible
Gary
country. our entire culture is just vacuous. Fuck us.
That's why we never win Eurovision. All our songs are shit.
And Europe hates us.
Yeah, so much.
Like, we deserve it.
Yeah.
Even before Brexit, they were like, fuck you.
I would say Google Mr. Blobby, but to be more specific, YouTube, because I don't think...
The still images won't do it justice. You've really got to hear him. It's like if a Dalek fucked a Teletubby.
Blobby, blobby, blobby!
Which I realise also won't help our American listening.
Right. It's like if this niche British cultural touchpoint fucked another niche British cultural touchpoint.
It's like if the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man rolled in
pink and yellow paint.
Yeah.
I could only say Blobby.
Yeah. In a real...
Blobby!
No, but like he's got that monster voice, which is like three voices at once, isn't he?
Yeah.
But that wheezy...
Blobby! Blobby! Blobby!
Hello, just want to say thank you for listening to the Lives of Pitch deleted scenes.
We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, maybe consider sharing it with your friends on social media, by word of mouth, anywhere really. Maybe put it onto a thumb drive and just throw it at someone. And maybe even reviewing it on wherever you got it. If you find it somewhere on iTunes or Acast or wherever, maybe review it there. 5 stars, thumbs up, give everyone the heads up.
Like I said before, thank you. Cheers.
Right.
Bye.